This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Hospice care is designed to provide comfort and support to terminally ill patients and their families. Hospice is not a place, but a description of the type of care given. This afternoon, we're going to talk about hospice and answer your questions about what type of care is provided. Later in the hour, the author of Lightbulb Baking, A History of the Easy Bake Oven. But first, joining me to talk about hospice care are Hospice of the Bluegrass Northern Kentucky Director Carla Foster and President and CEO of Hospice of Cincinnati, Sandra Lobert. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Many people I know have heard the word hospice and perhaps really think they have a good understanding of what hospice care is. But I think in reality, unless you've been right in the center of it, you may not know everything there is to know about hospice. And we're here today to talk about that. But I thought each of you could sort of give us a basic definition of what hospice is. And Carla, we'll start with you.
I think that whenever I talk to a family about what hospice is I have to first dispel some things about what it isn't. And oftentimes people still to this day think that hospice care is involved any time that there's a cancer diagnosis. And that's one of the first things that we have to dispel is to say, no, hospice care is for anyone who has a terminal diagnosis. And that terminal diagnosis could be – it obviously is cancer potentially – but it can also be a lot of other diseases. It can be congestive heart failure. It can be end-stage cardiac, which I just said, and end-stage pulmonary disease, so that when the lungs are no longer responding to treatment and the end of the disease is coming near, then hospice is appropriate for that. In fact, one of our largest and most quickly growing diagnosis in hospice care is the care of people with end-stage dementia and Alzheimer's.
I didn't know that. You say I learned something new right there. Can you follow up on that, Sandra?
Sure, I'd love to. And you're right, hospice is very inclusive in terms of any disease that might be terminal, but the care is really unique and it's really more of an experience. And it's very all-inclusive and it includes virtually everything that would be needed to care for the terminal illness. And it's also focused on care not only for the patient, but for the families. So one of the first elements of hospice care is really, really good symptom management. And I do want to interject that, you know, the hospice care definition is really 6 months or more. And many people think of hospice care for the last final days, but it can be the most helpful to people if it's for months. And some patients are even in the program for years. So the longer people are in the program, the more benefit they can really get out of it. But again, the first thing that we really focus on is expert symptom management. And our doctors and nurses are very specialized in this kind of treatment. Everybody understands that they want the best specialist for their heart or for their cancer diagnosis. And hospice medical practitioners are really specialists. So we get the patient comfortable. Everything that's needed for the terminal illness is covered in the hospice benefit, which means that all the medications are paid for, any medical equipment is paid for, personal care, and again, counseling for the whole family. And I think we can talk more about all those things individually, but it's a very holistic approach to caring for the patient and the family during their last 6 months or more of illness. And one other thing I'd like to say is that about 90% of people say that they'd rather not die in a hospital, but yet over 50% do. And hospice care is really, really good at helping people to die in the place that they choose to die, which is usually where they call home, and in the manner that they'd like to. And the way that hospice care does that is that we have 24/7 support available for people. Without hospice care, if a patient has some kind of a crisis in the middle of the night with pain or breathing or whatever, they really have no option but to call 911 and go to the hospital. With hospice care, there's 24/7 support. They can either speak to a nurse by phone or someone can actually visit the home. So it really helps people get comfortable, manage their symptoms, but avoid that cycle of hospitalization and other things that happen when they have to go to the hospital.
And I think one of the things that we always talk about as well is that when people say, well, it's time for hospice, you're talking about that greater than 2 weeks, they say, well, then it means that everything, hope is given up. And it's like, no, it's never about giving up hope. It's always about being aggressive in treatment, but aggressively treating comfort, aggressively treating symptoms. So I'm so glad you brought that up, Sandra.
Well, you mentioned that, and it's treating symptoms. It's not trying to cure the cancer anymore. It's not trying to cure the heart disease. I think that's something that's important to point out. Now, you said several things there that I wanted to follow up on. One of them was you talked about what hospice would pay for. And why don't we talk about how the cost works? Because my mom was in hospice care. She was on Medicare. What happened is she basically signed off on Medicare and instead went into hospice, and it was sort of a different payment. Can you explain how it is paid for through insurances or?
Well, most insurances follow what the Medicare guidelines are. And what Medicare says is that would you be surprised if this disease were to follow its typical course, if this patient would die within 6 months? And that's when we have our very seasoned and very knowledgeable practitioners be able to determine that, along with in conjunction with the patient's family doctor or their specialist or whomever would be also following them into hospice. But once that happens, then we basically become the managers of their benefit. And their hospice benefit is all-inclusive. So like Sandra was saying, all the things that are covered in there, we do become the managers of that benefit, and therefore we would be covering the durable medical equipment such as hospital beds, any sort of oxygen, any sort of assistive device, along with medications, and all of that is paid through this benefit. So it really does not cost the family or the patient anything because we are reimbursed through the Medicare benefit, and all those things are all inclusive in a per day rate. So that's how it's all paid for.
But what if a person's not in Medicare yet? What if they're too young?
Well, that's not only does Medicare cover it, but most private insurance plans cover it.
As well as Medicaid.
And when you think about, you know, right now the financial times we've been through, many people are really financially stressed, especially if they've been dealing with an illness. And very few people realize what a great financial benefit hospice is because, again, all the medications are paid for, basically everything needed for the terminal illness, with home visits, with aid visits, with support from chaplains, bereavement service. And again, it's a really all-inclusive benefit that's covered by Medicare, Medicaid, most private insurance. So financially, it's very helpful for the families once they're in the program.
Our number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment about hospice today, you also can email them to talk@wvxu.org or post them on Facebook or Twitter. You talked about 24/7 support, and I think that's also where there may be a little bit of misconception. Some people have said that, okay, hospice care means somebody comes and just does all the caregiving for the patient. And I at least found with my mom that was not the case, that people were there when we needed them, but we still needed, she needed 24-hour care, and we had to have caregivers there to do that. Is that an accurate description? Hospice comes in to assist the caregivers maybe that are already there?
Yes, that's accurate. I mean, generally speaking, most hospice patients are in their home or the place that they call home, and the family members continue to care for the loved ones. But the hospice nurses and aides will visit several times a week and manage the medications and so on and so forth. But that is a really good distinction. We are not at the bedside 24/7, except for in some very acute cases. But the 24/7 support is available. So if the family calls and says, I have a need, my loved one has changed in terms of their pain or something, then we can support them.
Yes, it's exactly the same as the hospice benefit. It's the same in Ohio as it is in Kentucky. And the ability to just be able to pick up the phone and call somebody and have that reassurance of a nurse on the other end of that line saying, try this, I'm getting in my car now and I'll be there, that can settle the situation down incredibly.
One of the other things that hospice does, and you've sort of alluded to it and talked about it a little bit, the whole idea of the team approach. And you have so many different people working on the case, from a doctor to a nurse to a massage therapist. I know my mom had one of those, or somebody came in and did art therapy with her. And
Social workers, chaplains, nurse assistants.
And you also work with the family as well. Talk about how that team approach works and how that makes a difference for a patient.
Well, when you're talking about this death experience, it is an experience that the entire family goes through. So having the social worker there who has education in how to help counsel people through this, not only as a spiritual, psychosocial type thing, but also a financial situation. You know, I always talk about death not just being a biologic event. It is spiritual, it's psychosocial, it's financial, it's all those things wrapped up. And the best way to handle those situations is to have a team, to have the chaplain be able to talk about maybe some of the spiritual struggles that either a family member or the person themselves that's experiencing the death is going through, and how am I okay with where I am spiritually? You know, to have that social worker be able to help with some of the situations. We don't cure families and their issues because, you know, that's just the way it is. But they'd be able to have that social worker help that family to just normalize what is going on within this experience. And it's much more than just the medical support. It's also all those other things.
You know, one of the things that I say a lot of the times is one of the biggest things that hospice care does is really talk to people and help them understand what's going on and help them understand what to expect. It's really sad when people come into our program at the very end, like in the very last couple of days, and they've just really learned that their loved one is terminal. And we really advocate for people, not only families talking about their end-of-life wishes, even if people are healthy, but then when people are in the program, really helping the families understand what might happen when things change. So when there is a change, they're not quite as frightened. It's still really difficult to deal with, but I think the more they know what to expect, the easier it can go.
Joe's calling from Chevy. And hi, Joe, what's your question?
Hi, I have more of a comment. Sorry, it sounded like I have kind of a bad line. I apologize. My grandmother recently went through hospice care, and we were shocked, and frankly, I was a bit disgusted at how much it cost. So I'm kind of alarmed to find that all this is covered. You know, she was paying around $7,500 a month, and it really depleted, you know.
For hospice care, did she have insurance?
She was 92, so I would have thought that she'd be eligible for Medicare.
Do you guys, they're both shaking their heads here. Can you address that?
My question would be, was she living in a nursing home?
No.
She was at home?
She was in the hospital, you know, at Hospice of Cincinnati here in the West Side.
I really don't think the bill would have been related to hospice. We'd be happy to look at that offline, but we have a fixed amount per day, and frankly, the number you threw out doesn't make any sense with what our rates would be. So that's something that we should talk about offline, but that's not at all consistent with a hospice rate.
How can Joe get a hold of you?
He can call Hospice of Cincinnati and ask for me, and we can talk about it.
Joe, I hope you do that. We'll see if we can get that taken care of. I think Joe is gone. Thank you so much for your call. If you have a question or a comment, our number is 513-419-7100. Again, you can tweet a question to us if you'd like. We're at 917WVXU, posted on Facebook, or email us talk@wvxu.org. As friends and family are starting to deal with the situation of a person in hospice, sometimes I think they can be uncomfortable and not know, should they visit, shouldn't they visit? Oh, that person's getting hospice care, maybe I shouldn't go. What do you advise family and friends to do when a loved one, a friend, is in hospice care?
It's one of the interesting things that we see in that. Actually, we actually have family members say to us, you know, when you go to and talk to mom, don't tell her you're hospice, because we don't want her to think that we've given up. And then we'll say, well, we won't deny it. If she asks, we'll be truthful. And then we'll go in and talk to mom, and mom will say, don't say anything to the children, because I don't want them to be upset. So what we that's one of the reasons that we need this team, is to go in and talk about what it means to be in hospice and to say to the patient, what is going to help you to gain some peace? And if they say, well, I want to be able to see my family, I want to be able to see my friends, then to encourage the family and the friends to be there for them. And to follow those cues and to ask and to open up and to talk. Everybody's making assumptions really is not helping. So they need to go.
In terms of visiting loved ones, we've had situations, I'm sure we all have, where people want to visit, but they don't know what to say. And sometimes we suggest these conversation starters that were written by Dr. Ira Byock. And he suggests the four things that matter most for any situation. But they would be things like, please forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. And if you think about any one of those types of things, they can be really good conversation starters. A lot of times family members have things they need to reconcile. And so regardless of what type of thing it is, I think visiting and letting the loved one know that you care is really, really important.
We talk a little bit about as people enter hospice, and one of the things that you really try to do is make them comfortable and treat their symptoms as opposed to aggressive trying to fight the disease or fight the
curative types of things.
Right,
yes.
Those sorts of things. Yet it seems, and I've heard many examples of people in hospice improving, getting better after they get the hospice care. What happens there?
You know, it's interesting that you say that because there have been studies that show that people that are in hospice care live on average 29 days longer. And they actually broke that study out by different diseases. And, for example, people with heart disease lived on average 81 days longer. And I think the reason for that is multifaceted, but a lot of it is that people are more comfortable. They're stopping some of the really aggressive and sometimes toxic treatments. They just have a better quality of life. Their entire mindset shifts from that proverbial fighting the disease to, wow, I really want to be comfortable and enjoy the time that I have left. And I think there are many dimensions to that, but it is true that those studies have shown, and even studies have shown that palliative care can extend life. And it's a huge shift and it's a huge benefit to families to have more time with their loved ones.
We have a question from Anne who says, resistance from family on treating with morphine tends to be a problem. And if you can address that, how do you deal with morphine? And do you find that some family members say yes, use morphine, others don't want to as a pain relief?
We do find resistance to that, but oftentimes it's because it's a lack of understanding of how that morphine is utilized, and that's why we want to be able to come in and educate. And again, our physicians, our nurses are the best ones to do that. And it's you know, it's like any other thing. The person who makes the decision is the patient and or the family. Now, can we do wonderful things with the different medications that we have? And morphine's just one of those things. And again, those are the things that we need to talk about. And I think one of the problems that morphine has and that hospice has is that there was that tendency to wait until the very last moments before death to get hospice involved. Then hospice gets involved in trying to aggressively deal with the comfort measures. We do utilize things such as morphine and other things as well, and then the patient dies. And so they have this association of the death being morphine-induced when it was really disease-induced. It's just waited such a long time before they got hospice involved. So morphine has its place. Is it the end-all? No, it's not.
Our number is 513-419-7100. Will's calling from Northern Kentucky. Hi, Will.
Hello.
What is your question?
Yes. Several years ago, my mother succumbed to kidney cancer. Anyway, I did not have a good experience with hospice. We had a Dr. Bechtold who came in down the hallway to look at my mom, but she didn't even examine her. She just stood in the hallway and looked at it. I think I understood my sister was having a hard time with this, and so I could not advocate for hospice because of that. We did go out and visit the Hospice of Cincinnati, the inpatient thing, because she was at pretty much the end of her treatments. My sister wanted her to keep getting treated, but, you know, I pretty much saw that, you know, there was nothing, it wasn't going to work. My experience there was that all the staff were at the desks And then we walked around the hallways, looked, you know, and you could see in the room the doors were open. Nobody, none of the staff were in there with the patients.
So you were not living it. You were just watching it sort of from the outside.
Well, I felt the whole facility was built for the families. It was not built for the dying people because I was a caregiver. I took care of my mom hands-on the last 2 years. I also did this for my father. And so when you have caregiver, a lot of experience, you've hired a lot of people, you've done their bowel movements, you've done every possible thing, you know, you know a little bit. You've learned quite a bit, and I felt more hospices trying to sell something. You know, they get so much per diem. It's sort of a business. And I know they're compassionate people. You women seem very, I don't know who you are, but, you know, you seem very knowledgeable and concerned. But I just feel that if a doctor takes a peek at somebody from a hallway, did not even go in and do that. I don't think that's professional.
Well, I was going to say that would be one experience that Will is having, and we appreciate those comments. I think those are things that we should all take to heart.
Very unfortunate.
I'm not sure if that's true of all cases, but that's clearly he made the decision that was best for his mother under those circumstances. We do have a Facebook post from Thomas who says he loves hospice. They all do great work. So I think it may depend on the particular experience that each person has. Will, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Betty Jo's calling from Northern Kentucky. Hi, Betty Jo.
Good morning. How are you all?
Just fine.
My family had a fabulous experience with hospice a number of years ago. My mother passed away in 47 days in our home. The hospice workers were a miracle. They were just a miracle when they came and helped us. But one thing I've learned since then is that there are a number of different hospice businesses, possibly in each community. Here in Northern Kentucky, we have Hospice of the Bluegrass, and then we also have St. E's Hospice. Obviously, I'm partial to St. E's Hospice because that's who took care of my mom. But I'm wondering, how does one, if one is in need of hospice, are you directed by the doctor or the hospital?
So how do you pick is basically your question. How do you evaluate that? Which one is best? How do you suggest people do that? I mean,
Betty Jo, what we tell people is that you need to interview both hospices and find out from them what the type of care that they give. It sounds to me like you had a wonderful experience. And all I can say to you is that anyone who works in this field, it's sacred work, and they're good people. So I'm glad you had a good experience.
Well, and I'll comment on the Cincinnati market because it's different than Northern Kentucky. There are multiple hospices in the greater Cincinnati area, and the vast majority are for-profit hospices. And that means their corporate mission is basically profit-oriented as opposed to mission-oriented. Hospice of Cincinnati is really the only not-for-profit hospice that serves the broad community in Northern Kentucky. And in greater Cincinnati. And there are quite a few differences, generally much more in the way of holistic services, many more inpatient care centers, which are really mission-driven, 100% mission-driven. We offer a lot in the way of grief services. So, and studies have shown that not-for-profit hospices have 14% more in nursing visits for patients. So there are some real differences, and I think interviewing your hospice is very, very important, and really understanding that there is a difference in finding out what's best for your family.
Betty Jo, thanks so much for your call. We certainly appreciate it. Going now to Will in Sharonville. Hi, Will. What's your question?
Hey, I'm Dr. Will Sawyer. I'm a solo family practice doc, and I believe that physicians should do a better job of talking with patients about the continuum of care, if you will. We're all going to end up at that point at some time in our lives. Some people, it's catastrophic, but I think the comfort care that's provided, the services that we have in Cincinnati are tremendous, and I think some physicians are afraid to talk about that, and I think that's part of the problem. And as that other fellow, Will, was saying, perhaps his mother's physician advocated the care to the medical director, but, hey, the private practice docs and the other family docs and internal medicine docs should continue to care for their patients while under hospice. That's a good relationship to maintain.
Thanks so much for your call.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
I'd like to comment on that. First of all, I really do agree that the family physician should stay involved, and it's really a kindness to the families and the patients when that happens. I also think it's a really important point that it's very helpful to families if the conversation is brought up sooner. And Hospice of Cincinnati has an initiative along those lines to engage in some training in the community on how to have the conversations earlier. And we also have a website that's going to launch this coming month called conversationsofalifetime.org. And it's really designed to help family members give them some tips on how to talk to each other so that they don't have to make really important decisions in a crisis, but rather they talk to each other up front to help each other know what's important, what they want, what their goals really are for end-of-life care. So that's something that we're really promoting in the community is conversations amongst one another to talk about it.
And in Northern Kentucky, we've been also conducting the Conversation Project. It's a national initiative to Sharon was saying was to make sure that we are doing this up front and not doing it during a crisis, that we're sitting down and having just the difficult conversation with our family members, with our healthcare providers, so that they know what it is that we want at a time when they need to make decisions and maybe we can't.
Thank you so much for being here. We are out of time. I want to direct everybody to our website, wvxu.org, where we have links to your organizations and other information that people may be interested there. I appreciate you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
We've been talking about hospice care. My guests today were Hospice of the Bluegrass Northern Kentucky Director, Carla Foster, and President and CEO of Hospice of Cincinnati, Sandra Lobert. In a moment, we'll talk about the history of the Easy Bake Oven. This is Cincinnati Edition.